Hour number two on this Thursday. It's Bickley Marotta live from the Ak Chin Community Studios here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, on our digital property, arizonasports.com. Prominently, as it should be, featured Dan Bickley's latest column entitled "Suns Impossible to Get a Read On Without a Real Point Guard."
Yes.
It spurred so many thoughts.
Oh, did it?
Yes.
I cannot wait to hear them.
I don't disagree with that. It's a very frustrating continuing storyline for the Phoenix Suns. And it continues. Even though recently as Monday, we've had discussions on this show talking about the growth and improvement of the point guard that is getting the bulk of the minutes right now, D'Anthony Melton. I like what I see from him. Mostly. Is he the ideal solution for this team? Right now, I could say no. That might change in the future. Who knows? James Jones, the interim GM of the Phoenix Suns, was on for his weekly visit with Burns and Gambo yesterday, and they asked, "Are you close to a deal for a point guard?" Here's what James Jones said.
"You know me, Gambo. I'll never broadcast what we do and what we're thinking about doing, but I will say, you know, the group of guys that we have, you know, we, especially post Kelly Oubre, I think you can see some cohesion, and you'll see that we believe in our guys and they believe in each other. So we're going to continue to focus on making these guys we have better. What happens outside of our doors, we can't control."
Yeah, we do know that James Jones likes to play, you know, what he's doing close to the vest, Jamal Crawford. Oh, Jared, you're not even ready. I am disappointed in you.
I thought
you were going to be way. Vinny's like, "I don't want to hear this anyways."
My.
Right.
Well, that makes my mouth feel good.
Jamal Crawford?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. The phone.
Okay. Now, there's a lot I want to carve up here and get your thoughts on, because I kind of spilled it all out there in the piece that I wrote.
Okay.
I think when you talk about the Phoenix Suns and what we're looking at here, we're looking at a basketball team that 9 years into a playoff drought is still the worst team in the Western Conference by a mile. But are they really, but are those days coming to an end? We all want to believe that. So you look at what we have in front of us in terms of assets, liabilities, criticisms, etc. The criticisms of DeAndre Ayton, Devin Booker, Igor Kokoschkov, all three of those players have been marginalized by not having a real point guard from day one. I think we can all connect the dots on that. And I tried doing the piece I wrote. Igor, you got a young rookie coach who's struggling to find his voice and traction in the NBA as the head guy, but he was brought in to implement a great offensive system. It's what he does. You can't begin to judge who Igor Kokoschkov is as a head coach if you don't give him a real point guard. Same with DeAndre Ayton. Same with Devin Booker.
Thank you for saying that, because when I initially read your column, that was the takeaway. It was like, okay, the Suns are hard to get a read on without a true point guard. True, but at least the verbal criticism that you've shared in our discussions on this show about DeAndre Ayton didn't seem to indicate that. I went back and I looked at all the turnovers that happened Monday night. Just for example, the Suns had 19 turnovers. Six of them were bad entry passes to DeAndre Ayton. Six!
Yep.
In one game.
Yep. I watched the last Suns game with a homework assignment for myself, and that was to cleanse all the bias and all the desire that DeAndre Ayton be more active, be more assertive, be more greedy, like Devin Booker is when it comes to point accumulation. And I did that. And I walked away from the game and I said, Suns have a real problem at getting him the ball. They really do. And DeAndre Ayton's game is such that when he doesn't get it, he doesn't make a big deal about it. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe I should quit using that as a negative. But I want him to grow. There's got to be a beast that's got to come out of DeAndre Ayton, in my opinion. I do not fault DeAndre Ayton for not being better than Luka Doncic right now.
But
I don't. But it's up to DeAndre Ayton to close that gap. Sometime. He's going to have to be the guy that says, I'm going to be better than that guy. Maybe he's ahead of me. Maybe he's had more training. Maybe he's played against men. But I'm going to be better than that guy.
Don't you think, though, it's human nature for most people, not all. Some are hyper-aggressive regardless of whatever the setting is around them. But I could say, generally speaking, most people, it doesn't matter what the setting is, aggressiveness comes with comfort. a lot of people don't start a new job and in their first week start making all these sweeping changes or kind of upsetting the apple cart. You know?
Okay.
You get more comfortable with what you're doing. You take more chances.
Okay.
And I think DeAndre Ayton is starting to find that comfort.
Okay.
I think there will be a time when if there's six bad entry passes, he is going to chirp a little bit.
Now, and to me, DeAndre Ayton is different because I'm not criticizing him for being a bad player or underachieving. I've been critical, and I think Jarrett's the same way, for not maximizing the gifts he has. And hopefully over time he will. You're bullish. You're very bullish on him. We all are, just to varying different levels. So that's DeAndre Ayton, because after watching the last game against the Pacers, they really do struggle at making a concerted effort to get their big guy scoring. And I think a lot of it is because Devin Booker is hogging that role, if you will. Now, here's item number two I want to talk about with Devin Booker. I found it really a coincidence with a lot of red flags that he came back to a team that was really performing well without him, and that team didn't seem to flourish. In fact, they seemed to regress with him. Now, I don't want to get crazy with this and suggest that Devin Booker's a liability. But Kelly Oubre...
You wouldn't be alone if you did, by
the way. I know. Kelly Oubre, and you even heard James Jones reference it, post-Kelly Oubre, okay? Kelly Oubre, DeAnthony Melton, Mikal Bridges, and DeAndre Ayton have kind of juiced up the defensive efforts of this team. Devin Booker came back, and that went away. Hopefully just for a night, but it went away. Maybe this is a clear sign that Devin Booker needs to adjust to what was happening without him more so than guys playing off of Devin Booker. Then maybe he needs to commit himself fully defensively to kind of mesh with what's happening. Because what's happening here is TJ Warren is on the verge of losing his starting job.
You think TJ Warren and not Mikal Bridges?
To me, if you're building an identity of defense, wouldn't you go DeAnthony Melton, Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges, DeAndre Ayton, Kelly Oubre?
Well, I mean,
Junior. Can't forget that.
We could have that side discussion too. I mean, we talked about the NBA earlier, and the whole conversation was predicated on the offense and how impossible it is to play defense anymore.
I know.
Are the Suns doing it wrong?
Yes. Are the Suns going down the Steve Wilkes path?
Here was James Jones yesterday with Burns and Gambo about that defensive identity.
We have to. You know, when you're a younger team, when you're a team that's less skilled, less seasoned than your opponents, you have to win on the edges. And so we need to be a very solid, active defensive team to give ourselves a chance. It's a piece of the puzzle. It won't be our true identity because we have guys like DeAndre. We have guys like Devin, who offensively every night have an advantage. We have to kind of blend it together, but most definitely we have to establish and maintain our defensive identity regardless of who we put on the floor.
I'm already tired of the Devin Booker argument against him. I got a text from a buddy earlier today. Very smart guy. Mm-hmm. Knows the game.
Mm-hmm.
Watches a lot of Suns basketball. Actually compared Devin Booker to Carmelo Anthony.
Ooh.
And asked that question, is that the comparison now? Which, I don't know, I think is ridiculous at this point. He's in his fourth year. He's had injury problems. He's improved every year he's been in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to the point guard spot. I don't want Devin Booker to become a defensive player.
Since he came in the league, the Suns have won 25% of the games he's played in.
Okay.
It's not on him. It's not on him, but...
What does Devin Booker do? What's his individual skill that stands out more than anything?
Score points.
Shooter, right?
Yeah.
Could be a devastating shooter.
Yeah.
We're 4 years into his career. We still don't know how good he can be as a shooter. I looked up catch and shoot numbers.
Mm-hmm.
That's, if you've got a great shooter on your team, that's the way you exploit that. Klay Thompson this year. Everybody talks about, oh, he had 50 points and he dribbled four times. He has the luxury of spotting up and shooting,
yeah,
which is what he's really good at.
Yeah.
I'm a shooter.
He gets 8.9 catch and shoot opportunities per game.
That's a lot.
Now, yeah, Obviously, they've got an offense in Golden State that is otherworldly, and they've got everybody can pass the ball. It's the perfect scenario for him, and it works. You know how many catch and shoot opportunities Devin Booker gets a game?
Four?
3.3.
Okay.
If you look at the way these teams are ranked, he gets as many catch and shoot opportunities per game as Jonas Jerebko does in Golden State. That's going back to the need for a point guard. That's where the Suns have missed the boat on giving Devin Booker help.
No,
and I like DeAnthony Melton, but you gotta find somebody who can exploit your advantages, and they have not done that.
Just the opposite, though. James Harden, in this run he's on, they showed a stat, back-to-back games, he has 115 total points.
And no assists on any of those.
Zero assists on any of the points.
Oh, James Harden has also run more isolation plays by himself than any other NBA team has run all season long. He's playing a different style of basketball from everybody
but
else.
Isn't that who they compare Booker to, though, in without this real point guard of how he's supposed to be playing?
Look, and again, let's zoom this out, because we have all played basketball and we all know the soul crushing, awful feeling to get stuck on a pickup team where one guy will not pass the ball, where one guy shoots ad nauseum. It's no different in the NBA. Do the Houston Rockets love playing basketball with James Harden when the offensive, the sugar, the candy store stuff is just him dribbling in isolation and shooting?
Oh, I've had that thought. And we had the discussion with Eddie House the other day. I mean, what he's doing now to help the Rockets win games, and they're shorthanded. Look at their roster. I mean, Gordon was back last night. They don't have really anybody right now. With Capella out, Chris Paul out, what he's doing to elevate them to win games and be in position to win games is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I'm sure most of those guys quietly are like, this is so stupid.
Oh, yeah.
They're all standing around the three-point line waiting for him to do something. And to his credit, he does it. It's not, as amazing as it is, it's not aesthetically pleasing.
And it doesn't feed a basketball team to the highest levels where basketball becomes art. Golden State has that. They share the ball, even with all those personalities. Teams that like playing with each other are the teams that you can earmark them for deep success. Teams like this, you have to wonder about, and I wonder, I'm not assuming or presuming or stating, I wonder about Devin Booker and how much guys like playing with him. And I only wonder it based on some of the things I've seen on the court this year, guys butting heads, and what I saw against the Pacers, where he came into a lineup that found a lot of lift or some competitive joie de vivre.
Wait, where have you seen guys butting heads? Where has that happened?
Okay, I mentioned three of them. And butting heads might be the wrong word, but I don't know. Flare-ups, dust-ups, whatever.
We've had four heated arguments on this show this week alone. How's our relationship?
Fabulous. Have they been heated? Yeah, I guess they have.
Shut up, Pick.
Want to go? Okay. They've demonstrative outbursts on the court that you don't see all the time. And DeAndre Ayton, Devin Booker, that was in the locker room after a game, but it spilled over. The doors open, the media comes in, and they're still barking at each other. Eli Okobo, Devin Booker, okay, whatever that was, you know, two guys both standing out of bounds, both thinking that they're supposed to inbound the ball. All right, fine. And then the Josh Jackson, TJ Warren thing.
Can I just jump in?
Yeah.
Because we're all over the map on this. Because DeAndre Ayton has been suggested he needs to chirp more because he needs to get the ball, demand the ball more. Wouldn't that fall into the same category as Devin Booker maybe calling or holding teammates verbally accountable for what they're doing
on
the court?
Some of it's just fine. Yes, I agree.
But Jarrett's point on the Booker-Harden comparison, again, the Suns are missing the boat. James Harden is a unique animal right now. If you are modeling or sculpting Devin Booker to be a James Harden-type player, you're doing him a disservice. Klay Thompson should be the example of how Devin Booker should be used, ideally. And is it hard to reach? Certainly. Why do you think Klay Thompson is such a great two-way player?
Do you think Devin Booker
doesn't have
cool with that?
He doesn't have to expend that much energy on the offensive
end.
He catches the ball and he shoots it.
And that's what I'm getting
at. And that excess energy...
Yep.
He creates havoc on the defensive end of the floor. Devin Booker's offensive workload is so heavy. He can't be a good defensive player. It's humanly impossible.
I think you just took that spike right in the heart of the problem. Right there. That Devin Booker goes, wait a minute. I'm a high volume scorer. I can't be doing all that. And a lot of scorers are like that. Yet the guys below him, when they're playing without him, what do they do? James Jones used the term, the guys are kind of wild when Devin Booker isn't here. But I think he meant it in a positive way, that they're playing with their hair on fire. Okay, all they have to do, they're playing the Toronto Raptors, good basketball team. Show it to me. Show me connectivity on the court. Show me that Devin Booker makes a team better. That's what I want to
see. Don't get blown out.
Don't get blown out.
But you're playing a good team on the road. We're not saying like you have to win. Enough with these 30-point losses, right, guys?
That's right. There you go. Especially when you're coming off a home win against Denver without Devin Booker.
Yeah.
And when you go on the road, you have a full practice, and then you get blown out in the first quarter.
I'm not going to completely dismiss that performance, and James Jones didn't either. He talked about how disgusted he was with what he saw.
The way we started the game last night was disappointing, especially coming off of the last week of progress and the practices that we had. We go into Indiana, a team that's playing exceptionally well. They're playing at a high level. We expected our guys to come out and compete, and they just didn't do it.
Yeah, and you can't, when there's not competition, you can't excuse it, especially when it's popped up as regularly as it has for the Suns, especially when you have your full complement of talent and you're not affected by injury in a game like that.
Yeah,
we'll see if they can make progress tonight. I don't feel great about it.
Well, you're playing a good team.
Toronto played last night. They lost in Boston, a short road trip back to Toronto, but maybe take advantage of that. Who knows? The last time the Suns were rested, they got blown out by the Indiana Pacers. We shall see. That game tonight, Toronto and the Suns, 5:30 tip here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, with the pregame coverage starting at 5 o'clock. The Umana Rock and Roll Marathon is this Sunday, January 20th. Come out and cheer on the runners and enjoy many great bands and more. For complete details, head to the events page at arizonasports.com or go to runrockandroll.com/Arizona. Remember when the hot stove in Major League Baseball actually garnered some headlines and some interest?
Yeah, I do.
We are one month away from pitchers and catchers reporting to major league camps in Florida and Arizona, and the biggest names in baseball are still looking for an address to play. And the latest on this is I have a hard time calling a $175 million contract offer to a star player a lowball offer, but Manny Machado is getting lowballed for the one reported offer out there by the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah.
But man, Major League Baseball is just boring when games are not going on. There's nothing to talk about in this sport
This is becoming an issue now, because what is happening in the Hot Stove League is, I don't know whether you want to call it collusion or a soft marketplace, but agents are ticked beyond belief. And I understand why. There is more liquid money coming into Major League Baseball than at any point in history. And yet there's also methodology that says, don't spend big money on players. It's a waste of money. Don't do it. You don't have to spend all that money to win baseball games. So you've got all this money flowing in and not a lot of it flowing out to payroll, to stars. And as a result, the Hot Stove League has been nothing for the last 2 years. J.D. Martinez was the poster boy last year. Manny Machado is the new one this year.
Yes.
Manny Machado... There was a rumored deal from the White Sox, 7 years, $175 million. The agent went nuts.
Yeah, I got the agent from Dan Lozano released a statement, too. And I say that, okay, put an asterisk by what I said, he's being lowballed, because that's what's being reported.
Yeah.
Dan Lozano is attacking the veracity of the reports that are out there. In the statement, he said, I have known Bob Nightingale and Buster Olney for many years and have always had a good professional relationship with both. But their recent reporting, like many others in the past several months, have been inaccurate and reckless when it comes to Manny Machado. I don't know if their sources are blatantly violating the collective bargaining agreement by intentionally misleading them to try and affect negotiations through the public, or just flat out lying to them for other reasons. But the truth is that their report on the details of the White Sox level of interest in Manny are completely wrong. I am well aware that the entire baseball universe, fans, players, teams, and media members are alike are starved for information about the free agent market for all players, including Manny. But I am not going to continue to watch the press be manipulated into tampering with not just with my client, but all of these players' livelihoods, as they've been doing this the entire offseason. The absence of new information to report is no excuse to fabricate news or regurgitate falsehoods without even attempting to confirm the validity, and it is a disservice to baseball fans everywhere when the media does just that.
So, now that's a mouthful. You have just called out two of the most well-respected national baseball people out there for throwing out and taking the company line and using suppressed, erroneous dollar figures to describe fair market value for the top-of-the-line guys.
But I don't think it's fair for Dan Lozano to single out Bob Nightingale and Buster Olney, who, as you said, are respected. If what Dan Lozano says is true, they're pawns in this whole thing, and they go through their processes of breaking news and reporting what's out there, and they've done it for years with really good accuracy. They're getting screwed with, is what it appears to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So Major League Baseball now is unplugging its own hot stove league. As Jared pointed out, long before the NFL offseason became a branded event with dates, boom, 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 long before the NBA offseason became almost more interesting than anything that happened in the playoffs, Major League Baseball branded their offseason.
The hot stove.
The hot stove league. Because this is where rumors and signings and the chance for
the
your
winter
team
meetings.
To get there, the winter meetings. And now nothing is happening.
Now, speaking of screwing with people.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we got another one.
Remember yesterday? Oh, everybody. Archie Bradley sent out a quote-unquote cryptic tweet with just a picture of him, and it said closing time. And shows on this station did segments about Archie Bradley is the new closer. Well, just a couple minutes ago, he tweeted out another photo, and this time it says, start me up.
Sounds like somebody got a talking to me.
Or he's screwing with people.
Or tomorrow, Archie Bradley just tweets out something.
Stuck like, in the middle with you.
The middle by Jimmy Eat World. Who's Jimmy Eat World? I never heard of
never
them
Never heard
before.
Of him. Never heard of him.
Jimmy Eat World. What do they sing? Yeah, Jared's right. Archie's messing with people.
I don't know. I read it differently.
He can't be a starting pitcher. He's got 1.5 pitches.
I read it differently. Archie got the closer's job, or pretty much close to verbal commitment, and tweeted it out. And the team said, dude, what are you doing? We're not even in spring training yet. We haven't announced jobs. And so, oh, I'm sorry. My bad. And then he tweets out, start me up. That's my take on it. That's my take. Because Archie Bradley, as you said, cannot be a starting pitcher with two pitches. He'll last less than Robbie Ray does as a starting pitcher. He won't get out of the fourth inning. Okay? So I believe his closing time tweet was accurate but premature, and the team had to reel him back in. And start me up as a way to kind of detonate what he threw out there. That's my
take. I pooped my pants.
Why would Archie Bradley just mess with people? He's not coming off that good of a season to mess
with people. Well, that's
true.
Like I said, social media is a cesspool.
You're right about that.
But going back to the Manny Machado thing and the lack of news to report, and maybe that feeds into this somehow. Major League Baseball, the NFL, you can rip the job that Roger Goodell has done as commissioner, and I'll be here for it. But one thing that they've done under Roger Goodell's leadership is stretched out the calendar. There are very few dead spots on the NFL calendar where there are not things to talk about league-wide. Major League Baseball has gone the exact opposite. Like you said, Vic, they used to have almost a monopoly.
A monopoly on it. Yeah.
It's so boring. I mean, Manny Machado doesn't have a team. Bryce Harper doesn't have a team. AJ Pollock doesn't have a team.
This is ownership and teams trying to take back power against a union that is really, really strong, so they can't lock them out or anything.
Well, that's the difference, is baseball's union is strong, football's union is weak.
Yeah, yeah, you could say that. But I'm not sure it's so as nefarious as it is teams just going, okay, look, I've got this money, I'm not against spending it, but all my GM's telling me I don't need to, so I don't want to. And so how do we sit on all this money? And I think that's what's happening now. This does not bode well. And you've heard a lot of people talk about this, from Scott Boras to Zach Greinke to now Dan Lozano.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good. It's not
good
at
all. No, we thought maybe last year was a one-year anomaly. That doesn't seem to be the case.
The only story about Major League Baseball we have is Kyler Murray bailing on the sport after he was the number 9th pick overall.
What about Wilmer Flores?
Oh, yeah. And the team of, would you say the team of all position players?
All utility
players.
All
utility guys.
Plus, Archie's going to start and close next year for the Diamondbacks. That'll be exciting. Take that, Otani.
Yeah, let's get that story up on the website. Coming up, we'll get back to the NBA. Kevin Arnovitz, ESPN NBA writer, will join us next. Spiklia Murata, live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Oh, we've been talking about the entertainment level of the NBA. Outside Phoenix, for the most part. There's a lot to talk about league-wide here to join us and help us discuss it from ESPN, the magazine, ESPN.com. NBA writer Kevin Arnovitz, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Kevin, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. I know you've been covering basketball, watching basketball for a long time. Can you compare what James Harden is doing right now on an individual basis to anything you've seen before?
There was a streak Kobe had, and I can't even remember the year. I mean, this must have been 12 to 15 years ago, where he was just rolling off 40-point games at will. But the thing is he wasn't nearly as efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so amazing about Harden, is we've talked about this movement, threes and layups, you know, the two-point long two-jumper for a guy who can create his own shot, it's easier said than done just to abandon it, right? It is so – it's always there. And the fact that Harden has been able to conform to these trends and still play hero ball is unreal. Like the combination of the two. I mean, just how efficiently he is doing it offensively. So I haven't seen a stretch like this in ages.
Kevin, and it's funny because James Harden's game, unlike Steph Curry, it's not universally hailed as being aesthetically pleasing. There's a lot of deception.
Oh, it's gross.
It's gross. Free throws, traveling. How does that factor into the whole narrative?
I mean, these guys are in some ways modern dancers too, you know, and what Steph does is particularly elegant. It's attractive. It's, you know, it with Harden, it's 3 yards and a cloud of dust. I mean, look, I think anybody who appreciates basketball and footwork can look at that step back three and we marvel. So, I mean, there is something, I don't know if we put that in the aesthetic category, but tactically speaking, I mean, that it is an incredible feat of athleticism in its own way. It's just not, it doesn't kind of fly off the page, if you will. But I've never been a fan of the contact and the lurching, but he's crafty. And look, the goal is to, you know, you play to win the game, and he plays to win the possession, and he does. But it is certainly, it lacks, you know, it doesn't have the brute strength and sort of the power, speed, grace of LeBron. Like if we kind of ranked all the top players on aesthetic ratings, and look, it's a subjective measure, you know, LeBron has, there's a certain just sort of that power finesse combination. Steph is Steph. Even like Durant's body, the way he kind of glides into his shots. I mean, I'm not a huge fan aesthetically of Durant's game. He's fantastic. He's not a guy I love to watch, but I think the body sort of, yeah. But James is sort of, you know, it's a little stocky. It's not like the body isn't lithe. I think it's a combination of, you know, the foul hunting and the body itself,
yeah,
makes for a less aesthetically pleasing superstar performance.
Yeah, Kevin Arnovitz of ESPN, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. I guess the next question on this is the sustainability of this from a workload standpoint for James Harden. Does it need to be as sustainable as the Rockets get healthy? And where do you handicap them now as a real player in the Western Conference, if you do at all?
Yeah, so I worry, and I think we forget the 2017 playoffs. You know, he ran out of gas, and he will deny to this day that it has anything to do with him chasing the MVP and the minutes. And he, you know, Mike D'Antoni implored and begged him, you know, to be willing to kind of reduce the minute load, and he wouldn't do it. And it wasn't a battle that D'Antoni was going to fight much longer. But it did have, you saw it in the second round. I mean, they petered out, and it was very much, I think he just ran out of gas. And I think they're going to have to at some point moderate him if they do have aspirations. The problem is, like, where are you going to get that production?
Yeah.
With Chris Paul out? I mean, where are you going to get the production with, you know, look, if it were, if Paul and Capella could pick up the load a little bit here and there, they could run pick and roll, you know, 14 minutes a night.
Yeah.
Harden can, you know, can take a breather, but it's just like, where are you going to get this production
sure.
in a Western Conference where, by the way, dropping three in a row means you're in ninth place.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. and that's yeah. just reality in the West.
Yeah. All right, other basketball stuff. I want to ask you about the Golden State Warriors that who are going to welcome in DeMarcus Cousins, who just said the Warriors are the most hated team in the league. When they play well, it's kind of this reminder that with all this great parody and drama we're seeing in the NBA, maybe it really is as who said it? Somebody called it, it's just a wrap. What are your thoughts on DeMarcus Cousins joining this team and what this team ultimately means in the NBA story?
Well, first of all, I don't think they're the most hated team. I think actually for dynasty teams, they're relatively loved. I mean, let's just go around. I mean, I this has been bothering me. I'm glad we're talking about it. you know, I mean, the Patriots are loathed outside of New England.
Yes.
I mean, they really are. Nobody likes the Patriots. You know, when I was growing up, the Cowboys, I mean, yeah, they were America's team, except that 80% of America loathed them. I mean, you tuned in to watch the Cowboys lose, the Yankees. I mean, the Warriors, because of their aesthetics, and we talked about it earlier, like, I think they're relatively loved for a dominant team. And I think that's largely a manifestation of Steph just being really likable. And you want to watch the little guy shoot and do these great things. You know, DeMarcus, I think it's going to be a work in progress. It's an interesting fit from the outset, right? He's not a, you know, we saw what happened when George Karl was his coach and wanted, you know, to run the floor. He's just not a guy that does that. On the other hand, he does fit into their general scheme. And in fact, in some ways, he's more 2014-15-16 Warriors. You know, people forget what a good passer he is. But in terms of that sort of, you know, let's run offense through bigs and we're going to run a bunch of split cuts and we're going to spread the floor. Like, DeMarcus at his best does – other than the pace issue, which is going to be a problem, but it was sort of a half-court practitioner. He's actually really well-suited, almost for that Andrew Bogut role, if you think about, I mean, obviously physically and in terms of attributes, different players, but they're both sort of ball movers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be interesting to see. I just don't expect much from them, and I say this not as a criticism. I mean, the guy's been out for a year. He hasn't played in a competitive game for a year, and his Achilles is it's a really difficult injury to rehab. I think it's going to be kind of rusty till after the All-Star break. When it's going to get interesting to me is you know, as they prepare for the playoffs, and look, is this guy going to be out there for 22 to 28 minutes and meaningful playoff games? Then it's going to be really interesting to see.
Kevin Arnovitz of ESPN, our guest here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Got to squeeze in a Suns question because we've had this this discussion all year long when it comes to the Phoenix Suns. Where's the point guard? And we could pick out certain things we like about what DeAnthony Melton has done. But in your mind, Kevin, how much of a disservice have the Suns done to two of their building blocks on their roster, DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker, by not having a real serviceable NBA point guard this year?
I mean, I think we all talked about this last time, and I mean, look, you'd rather have one than not have one. I mean, I would argue that you know, Booker kind of is your point guard in a modern NBA, not because he necessarily has the attributes of a natural point guard, but just that's the way the game is played. The ball, you know, is in his hands, mm-hmm. as we say. You know, I don't – it would have been nice had in the 11,000 draft picks they've accumulated in the last 5 years that one of them actually surface as a serviceable point guard. Like, that's a problem. But in terms of compromising the future by giving away, I mean, like, going out and signing or overpaying somebody who's not all that good. Look, you know, they had a good point guard and they alienated him.
Yeah.
You know, and now he's with the best team in the league, literally the team with the best record in the league playing, you know, might even get an all-star vote from me, Eric Bledsoe. But, you know, hey, that didn't work.
Don't do that, Kevin.
Organization. No, but I'm just saying, like they've had, like, it's not, I mean, this is a manifestation of something much larger.
Sure, it is.
Which is an organization just in disarray.
Yep.
And, like, this is what happens. Look, they could put together a package for Dennis Smith. By the way, they're also going to have a top five pick again this year.
Mm-hmm.
So their point guard's in the draft. Go get one.
Yeah.
And don't develop them and then complain about this three more years. Like, at some point, it's just like, Phoenix, the Suns really annoy me. And I grew up kind of like, I loved the team of a decade ago.
Yeah.
Like,
Same here.
I love the market. I love what Suns basketball has always meant. But, like, watching this, they have been endowed with nothing but picks. Like, at some point, take responsibility you know, for the resources you've been given, instead of they're like this kid who goes and breaks their toys and, I need another one. Oh, good, here's another top five pick this year. Because you don't know how to develop a team. Because you don't know how to create a managerial structure that fosters any kind of progress as a basketball franchise.
Wow.
You know, because
well
your
said.
Ownership is just a problem. No, it's just like Emily said, you were talking about point guard. I mean, they can go make a deal for Dennis Smith. He's available.
Yeah.
You know, there are only three teams who need a point guard. Detroit, Orlando, and Phoenix. Everybody else is pretty much set.
Yeah.
So it's not like the market isn't there, but it's just like at a certain point, just why don't you take one of your 11,000 draft picks and develop one?
If you didn't know any better, you'd really think that they were trying to lose, like the producers. You're trying to produce a bad Broadway musical.
I mean, bring in Mel Brooks. And by the way, and like I feel terrible for Igor, who's just like truly like those who know international basketball, and it's just – you know, he's a guy with an incredible temperament and a real, you know, sort of, you talk about aesthetics. I think someone who knows how to assemble, you know, attractive basketball, you know, it with the right support. And, I feel terrible for him.
Yeah.
But it's just a mess.
Kevin, thank you so much for the time. Always appreciate the conversation, man.
Well, I'm glad I got that off my chest.
Yes, I'm glad you feel better. Kevin Arnovitz, ESPN, our guest on the Coulter Automotive Group sports line. That's CoulterTP.com, Coulter on Camelback.com, and CoulterNissan.com. Coming up, it's been a while since Tom Brady and the Patriots have been an underdog. They are taking it and running with it. We'll get into that next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Some people say that sports radio in Phoenix is already like school in summertime.
No class.
Bickley and Murata.
There are no more messages.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Doesn't change much for us, but it just, you know, shows you kind of what, you know, people would think about, you know, what our chances are. That's about it.
Doesn't.
No more added comment to that.
Extra motivation at all?
I mean, if you're not motivated this week, you got a major problem.
It's Tom Brady, the quarterback of the New England Patriots. Maybe you've heard of him. Talking about the fact that the Patriots, with Tom Brady at the helm, are three-point underdogs going into the AFC Championship game Sunday at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. It's the first time in a really, really long time that the Patriots have been underdogs. And they are taking full advantage of it. I have a problem.
So obnoxious.
When pretty much any NFL team says, oh, nobody gave us a chance. You're one of 32. You're professional athletes. You have a chance.
You have a chance.
It kind of bugs me. Like Jacksonville rode that last year and it kind of bugged me, but they're Jacksonville.
Yeah.
For the Patriots to do this, come on. Really?
Yeah. Oh, I know. Look. The Julian Edelman t-shirt about this, the lack of respect, the don't bet against us routine.
No, bet against us.
Oh, that's it. Bet against us.
Yeah.
Which is even worse. That's even more taunting and more obnoxious. If you thought the Patriots were over the top with all of this to begin with, you got to get a load of this. And I just...
The first time they've been an underdog since week two of the 2015 season.
Get over
season.
Yourselves. Yeah, bet against us. Wow. Okay. I guess whatever they want to use as motivation is fine, but it just strikes you. It just comes off as obnoxious, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Put it this way.
Great way to put it.
Put it this way. I would really like to buy one of those Bucko Bruce t-shirts. I would not want to buy that Bet Against Us t-shirt, which is written in the form of the Patriot logo. Patriot Pat or whatever his name is.
As far as t-shirt design goes, well,
it's all right.
Well done.
It's okay.
You know, that all being said, I don't know how much of this is going to be used as motivation by the Patriots. I think they're going to win on Sunday.
Do you really?
Yeah.
See, depress me even further. I am not even a Kansas City Chiefs fan, but I am so vested in the Patriots not winning this game, you have no idea. I don't know if you could script a better coaching matchup, recent vintage, in the NFL. Because you're talking about Bill Belichick, who may or may not be at the end of this run. There are a lot of people who saw the end coming this year for New England, and this is kind of what Julian Edelman, this is kind of where this whole thing is coming from. It isn't just being an underdog in Kansas City. It's all the people yapping that this thing has reached its end. Okay, but there's a lot of evidence to suggest that the Patriots are dealing with some dysfunction that they haven't dealt with in the past. Bill Belichick, who blew apart Gus Bradley, maybe Josh McDaniels did, but it all flows from Bill Belichick.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Belichick versus Andy Reid with this team that Andy Reid has, This isn't a Donovan McNabb-led Eagles team. Okay? This is a rookie quarterback who is showing incredible maturity and skill.
First-year starter. Second year.
Yeah, that's what I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes. First-year starter.
About Patrick Mahomes, he does have some experience against New England. These two teams met during the regular season in one of the more memorable games of the 2018 campaign. Patriots win it. But Patrick Mahomes talked about lessons he learned from the first meeting against New England.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't feel good. I mean, we especially me and the team, I felt like we didn't play our best, or especially early in the game. And when you play teams of this caliber, you play teams with this much history of knowing how to win and capitalizing on people's mistakes. I mean, you can't come back and win games like that. And it was shown that game. And so for us, we have to learn from that, know that we can't make those mistakes. We have to come out with our best effort from the beginning of the game all the way through the end. And it's going to be a dogfight for the entire game if you want to try to come out with a win.
A lot was made about the weather going into this game. That prediction of the weather is softening by the minute.
Is it really? I did not notice that.
The prediction for the projected low temperature has bumped to 22 degrees, according to weather.com. High for Sunday expected to be 27. Don't get me wrong, that's cold. The low is expected to be 22.
That's amazing.
Only a 10% chance of precipitation, and wind won't be a factor either, 7 miles per hour. So much like that Super Bowl in New York between the Broncos and the Seahawks at the Meadowlands, New Jersey, I guess. That weather forecast softened as you got closer to the game, and it really wasn't a factor at all.
Yeah.
I don't think weather's going to be that big of a factor.
Well, clearly with those temperatures, it's not going to be. And I think that's a good thing for just, you know, the sake of pure competition, and you don't want fluke weather patterns dictating NFL Super Bowl championships. Yeah. At least I don't like that idea.
NFL Films, by the way, put out some mic'd up footage of Joey Bosa of the LA Chargers in the playoff matchup against New England. And it was, I mean, I love all that stuff when they release it. I don't care who the player is or who the team is, but Joey Bosa was just marveling the entire game.
Yeah.
At Tom Brady's ability to get rid of the ball. There's one time where they're walking back. You know, Bosa wins on the rush, can't get to him because the ball's already out, and they're walking back towards the line of scrimmage, and Joey Bosa says, "Stop throwing the ball so fast, Tom."
I think a lot about this football game. I hate to put too fine of a point on it, the whole good and evil routine, but I just think it would be so good for the NFL to get a team like Kansas City. And what an accomplishment it would be for a team like Kansas City to take the stand they did against Kareem Hunt. Well, I'm not going to give them credit for that. They knew about it beforehand, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, they didn't handle it perfectly, but from a football loss standpoint,
yes, it wasn't
there was some people that thought that might be a real speed bump to their season.
Yeah, it's true.
And they got pretty far down on their running back depth chart, and that offense has been impervious to it so far. So credit goes to them from a football standpoint, certainly.
Yep.
It should be a good weekend. Championship games, we'll get more into those tomorrow on the show as we preview the AFC and NFC championships. Coming up, midway point on the Thursday show. The Bickley Blast straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.